about it with the guys, and they accepted him because of it. Plus, he never acted or talked like the stereotypical gay guys that people think are caricatures of the entire population. I mean, who does that anyway? That's one of the other things about rugby, too. I think that because it is such a fringe kind of sport that practically borders on the insane, rugby guys stick up for and tolerate one another more than boys tend to do in other sports. Sure, sometimes the guys would make teasing jokes behind Joey's back and even to his face. But they did that to every single player on the team. And being gay or uncoordinated or only 14 and in the 11th grade for that matter didn't really have anything to do with it. Because there was absolute equality of opportunity in being picked on in a good-natured kind of way. But no one on our team ever took it too seriously. Chaz was kind of the exception on the team, and maybe he was always overcompensating through his bullying because he recognized that he didn't fit in very well. And maybe, too, the guys and the coach just put up with his being such a colossal asshole because he was a great athlete. I yawned and folded my legs Indian style as we put in the first blinds and Chaz shuffled the non-betch cards. Chaz looked across at Joey and Kevin and said,
"Did you bring the refreshments?"
"Sure did." Kevin smiled, and then he and Joey stretched their legs out straight so their socks were practically in my face and pulled up their sweats from the bottom. That was when I could see why they wore their rugby socks. Both of them had two tall cans of beer on each of their legs, snugged down tightly inside our team hoops. So when they rolled their socks down and made a little shrine from 8 24-ounce cans of beer on the floor beside us, I really felt scared. Because 3 didn't divide evenly into 8. And I had never, never taken a drink of alcohol in my life. What if it stunted my growth?
"And they're still pretty cold," Joey said.
He obviously was the designated beer passer-outer. He handed a can to Chaz, then Kevin, and then he grabbed one from the shrine and tilted it toward me, a calm and serious look in his steady half-fly eyes. "I never had a drink before in my life," I said.
"It's okay, Winger," Joey said. "I was just offering, I understand."
I was so relieved, and I liked Joey even more at that moment, but I mean that in a totally non-gay way, because I felt like he was sticking up for me. Chaz and Kevin had already opened their beers and were drinking before the first deal, and Joey took the beer he'd offered me and popped it open for himself. Then Chaz reached across our little poker circle and grabbed a can of beer away from Joey's arrangement, pulled the tab forward so I could hear and smell that beer trying to find a way out of the can, and placed it on the floor beside my knee.
"It's time for you to lose your beer virginity, Winger," he said. Then he raised his can to the center and said, "Cheers."
And we all tapped cans. 6 eyes watched me, and I closed mine as tight as I could and took my first ever swallow of beer. As Chaz began dealing the cards out, all these things kind of occurred to me at once. 1, the taste. Whoever drinks this piss when they're thirsty, are you kidding me? Seriously, you've got to be kidding. 2, little bit of vomit in the back of my throat. It gets into my nasal passages, it burns like hell, and now everything also smells exactly like barf. Nice, real nice. 3, I am really scared. I am convinced something horrible is going to happen to me now. I picture my mom and dad and Annie, she is so smoking hot in black, at my funeral. 4, mom and dad? I feel so terrible that I let them down and became a dead virgin alcoholic at 14. 5, for some reason, Chaz, Joey, and Kevin are all looking at me and laughing as quietly as they can manage. 6, woohoo! Chaz dealt me pocket jacks. And I drew the jacks as though I could hear them telling me what to do.
"Trust me, kid, bet big. We wouldn't steer you wrong, kid, and have another drink."
An hour later, I had finished my entire beer. I needed to pee so bad there were tears pooling in my eyes. I forgot what my home phone number was. I don't know why it mattered. I don't even know why I silently asked myself the question, "Hey, Ryan Dean, what's your home phone number?" But I was emotionally devastated, crushed, that I forgot my home phone number. And I was the first player to lose all his chips, too. By 2 in the morning, the game was finished. Joey won everyone's money, which gave him the right to determine the consequence. Oh, yeah. The consequence. Chapter 8. Thank God it had nothing to do with getting naked. Thank God again, it had something to do with peeing. I needed to pee so bad, I sat rocking back and forth in a near catatonic state with my hand jammed down between my legs. Then Joey told me, "Here's all you gotta do, Ryan Dean. This is an easy one. All you gotta do is go downstairs and take a pee in the downstairs girl's bathroom." "But Mrs. Thinger is down there." I couldn't remember her name. "Singer," Chaz corrected. I rocked. I thought he was telling me I had to sing, too. Oh, well. I kind of felt like singing. Yeah, 142 pounds gets pretty stupid when you add 24 ounces of beer to it. "Hey," I said, continuing my journey into stupidity, "do any of you guys know my home phone number? I think it's got a 24 in it, too." At that moment, I think everything in my universe had a 24 in it. "Come on, retard, before you piss in your pants," Kevin said, pulling me up by my armpits. I felt like I was standing on ice skates, and I nearly fell down. But Chaz was right there behind me, holding me steady. "Hey, thanks," I said. "You guys are really awesome." I would have shaken hands with them, but I didn't dare let go of my dick. They turned out the flashlight and pushed me toward the door. "You remember what you gotta do?" Chaz said. "Yeah," I said confidently. "What?" "Go pee in the girl's bathroom downstairs," Joey reminded. "Oh, yeah," I said. "And sing, too." I don't know exactly where I got the singing part from, but Chaz, Joey, and Kevin weren't about to stand in the way of my willingness to compound my idiocy. "Come on," Chaz whispered, pushing me out the door. "And you better do it, 'cause we're going to be following." "You guys are the best," I said, and they all three whispered, "Shh," as we made our way down the lightless hall to the stairwell. And every step I took made me feel like a water balloon filled to the bursting point. I was convinced I would explode in a shower of pee and guts right there on the stairs. It hurt so much to move, but each foot forward brought me closer to relief. I was sweating like a heroin smuggler at a border crossing when we cracked the door open onto the girl-less girl's floor. I ice skated in my socks down the dustless linoleum hallway. It felt nice under my feet, so nice I almost began laughing, but I wasn't stupid enough to do that yet. Chaz, Joey, and Kevin made their way around the outside of the building. They instructed me to pull open the window once I'd gotten into the bathroom, so they could help me get away if I needed to. And I thought, no wonder I couldn't remember my home phone number, but it still choked me up nevertheless, because I drew a mental Ryan Dean West brain capacity allocation pie chart, and it came out like this. Ryan Dean West brain capacity allocation. 2% remembering to open the window for the guys. 5% deciding on what song to sing. 13% finding a toilet in the dark. 80% concentrating on not peeing in my pants. So there you go. It's a miracle I didn't forget to breathe. I am such a loser. I found the bathroom. When I got inside and shut the door, I reached over to flick on the lights. But the switch was on the opposite side of the door from the boys' bathroom. And this gave me time to realize how stupid turning on the lights would actually have been. But drunk or not, at least I was smart enough to latch the door behind me. And then I thought, wow, this is a really nice bathroom, so clean and spotless, with nice clean curtains hanging across the row of shower stalls. It was so nice, I almost wanted to lie down on the cool, clean floor and take a nap. But I had to pee too bad. So I turned toward the wall opposite the showers and hurriedly unzipped. The urinals were gone. Oh, yeah. So, standing there as I was, pulled halfway out of my pants, made me want to pee even worse. I literally almost began to cry. Then I heard a scraping at the window and ran over and unfastened the catches. Chaz lifted up the window and stuck his head inside. My pants fell down around my ankles. I pushed open a stall. The goddamn toilet seat was down. Too bad. I couldn't slow down for such genteel considerations as raising a toilet seat. Something for which I hadn't been yelled at since I was about 7. Sweet mother of God, it felt good to pee. And it wasn't just peeing. It was something more. It was the god of peeing. It was the Zen archery, but with a stream of piss rather than a bow and arrow. And it was so loud and musical sounding, which reminded me to start singing. Heck, I figured the stream wouldn't likely slow down before dawn anyway. So while I am sure that the natural sound of Zen peeing was in itself loud enough to roust Mrs. Singer, the girls' floor resident counselor, from her sleep, my choice of song ensured the fact. I began singing a rugby song called Proper Ranger, whose lyrics include some of the most tasteless, imaginable descriptions of sex acts. And it doesn't even rhyme very well either. But some of those words just don't have good rhyming matches anyway. The thing about the song, though, is that if you are a rugby player and are present when another rugby player begins to sing it, you have to sing along. So Chaz, Joey, and Kevin all joined in at the appropriate time while I continued the liberation of my unstoppable torrent of pee. And Zen-like, everything came together at the end. I shook off, pulled my pants up, failing with the complexities of my zipper. The song finished, with words I won't repeat here, and the very unhot Mrs. Singer began rattling the doorknob and trying to pound her way in.
"What are you doing in there?"
she demanded through the door, and I giggled because I thought, that's a dumb question. Who within 100 feet, door or not, couldn't tell what I was doing in there. Pound, pound, pound.
"Who's in there?"
And Chaz said, "Come on, Winger." And just as Chaz and Kevin grabbed my wrists and pulled me through the window, I heard the exceedingly never spent a fraction of a minute in her life being hot Mrs. Singer say through the door,
"I am going to put a diarrhea spell on you."
Well, I can't be sure exactly, but it sounded like that was what she said to me. I fell down, giggling, in a clump of ferns beneath the windowsill.
"Hey, where are my shoes?"
I asked. I studied my feet where I had propped them up on the outside of the log-constructed O-Hall. Yeah, I was ultra-stupid.
"You weren't wearing any, retard," Chaz whispered.
"Then why'd I come outside if I wasn't wearing shoes?" It was like I'd forgotten everything that had taken place in the past 2 hours and was willing to have a conversation about it so I could fill in the holes. I realized then that the Ryan Dean West pie chart of brain activity was an empty tin, not even a crumb of crust left in that skull. Thank God I had my teammates there to look after me. Well, at least I had Chaz, because Joey and Kevin had already climbed up the outer wall of O'Hall and squeezed back inside their window.
"Come on, Winger. We gotta go,"
Chaz said. He began climbing up the corner logs of the bottom floor and whispered over his shoulder,
"I am not carrying you, so you better get moving now, or your ass is toast."
Chapter 9. The next thing I can remember is thinking, what is that fucking noise? Somehow, I managed to get out of my clothes and under the sheets. So much for memory. And for a brief instant, a thought flashed of all those cheesy and predictable crime dramas where someone kills another someone and then doesn't remember doing it. I thought I should check my hands for blood or something. but it felt like I'd left my arms in another room, in another state, or maybe on another planet. Please make that goddamned noise go away. The alarm clock was blaring. It was 7 o'clock, the first day of school, and I was lying there, twisted up in my bedding on the top bunk, alone in my O-Hall cell. Chaz was gone. Maybe I killed Chaz Becker. The alarm clock would not shut up. And when I sat up and tried to get my feet down off the bed, it felt like I left the inside part of my head, the invisible Ryan Dean West part, on the pillow next to me. This wasn't good. I was almost about to start crying because the alarm clock wouldn't leave me alone. I tried to remember what happened the night before, but everything seemed disjointed and out of sequence. I felt horrible. I somehow had convinced myself that everyone in the world had woken up to the news that Ryan Dean West had gotten drunk off one giant beer and had ruined his entire life in the span of about 3 hours. By the time I could stand, it was 7:04. The alarm clock and my head were still buzzing. Classes began in 56 minutes. I finally got the alarm turned off, opened the door, and stumbled down the hallway toward the bathroom wearing only my boxer shorts and one dirty pulled-down sock with bits of what looked like ferns on it, pie chart, still empty, with no idea how I ended up like this. If I could have thought clearly enough at that moment to formulate a plan of action, I would certainly have killed myself on the spot. I did not kill Chaz Becker. Chaz was in the bathroom, wrapped in a towel, shaving. I saw him smirk at me in the mirror when I staggered through the door. I stood at the sink beside him, turned the water on cold, and held my face in front of the mirror with both of my hands propped on the tile countertop, elbows locked, like I was steadying myself on one of those godforsaken crab boats in the Bering Sea. And I don't know why I turned the water on either, because I just stood there, looking horrified at my reflection in the mirror as Chaz smirked and shaved and smirked and shaved. "I think you can skip a shave today, Winger," he said, and wiped some menthol-smelling shaving cream on my never-so-much-as-fuzzed cheek. And Chaz looked so normal, too, like he could do shit like that every night, and it didn't even affect him. I suddenly felt very sick. "Oh, Winger partied too hard last night," Chaz said, and I heard some other voices laughing. But I really can't say for sure who else was in there. Ghosts of dead teenage alcoholic former O-Hall inmates, probably. I pushed away from the sink, leaving the water running, and I thought, why did I forget to put my face under that flow and drown myself? And then I thought, oh yeah, because I need a toilet. I stumbled past the row of shower stalls with their torn and moldy plastic curtains and the bank of urinals opposite them, and I began to remember being in this place, but it was different, too. God, I was sick. I made it to a toilet stall and slammed the door shut. I hardly had time to pull my boxers down and sit, and that's when it all came back to me, and I remembered Mrs. Singer's cursing me. A diarrhea spell. You have got to be kidding me. I knew it was just a weird coincidence. It had to be. But this really, really sucked. Welcome to the 11th grade, loser. As I stumbled out of the stall, my skin cold and sweaty, feeling like one of those eyeless white caves salamanders, Chaz was there, still smirking, wiping his face and watching me. "Hey, asswing, you better hurry up if you want to have time to eat," he said. Asswing? That was a new one. Clever. "Eat? Yeah, you know, breakfast, eggs, milk, yogurt." Bastard. The yogurt part did it. Why the hell did he have to say yogurt? I went back into the stall. Chapter 10. All the boys in O'Hall left before me. I'm sure they were enjoying their yogurt and talking about their classes, or about how Ryan Dean West got drunk last night and ruined his life. Somehow, I managed to get myself dressed, gray socks, tan pants, white long-sleeved shirt, black and royal blue-striped school tie, dark navy sweater vest, black shoes. And I thought, what a stupid waste of energy, since period one was conditioning 11M. That meant it was for 11th grade boys. And I'd just have to take all these stupid clothes off right away. But at PM, you couldn't walk anywhere on campus during the school day without being in proper uniform. I thought about going to see the doctor because I had to make two more trips to the toilet before I was fully dressed. But I was afraid that the doctor would discover that I was a 14-year-old with booze in his system, and that was too scary for me to deal with. So I decided I'd have to be tough, like Annie told me, and suck it up, even if it felt like I was dying. I made certain this time that our room was entirely clean and the beds were made before I grabbed my schedule and backpack. It was 7:45. I wondered what Chaz had done with those beers, and then, just thinking about it, made me realize another stop at the bathroom was required. And as I went downstairs and pushed through the double doors that opened on O'Hall's large mudroom, I saw the so-not-hot-you-should-never-look-at-her-when-you-have-a-hangover Mrs. Singer just standing on the other side of the window in the door that opened onto the hallway of the girlless girl's floor, with her arms folded across her withered breasts, breathing on the glass, watching me as I left for school. Nothing in the world could convince me at that moment that she didn't know I was the sick and guilty son of a bitch who woke her up 5 hours earlier. How could she not know? I practically ran out of O'Hall, which was a mistake, because the speed at which I was moving made me feel sick again. I kept my head down as I walked through the crowds of uniformed kids clustered around the main campus, smelling all the nauseating smells of brand new clothes, brand new backpacks, brand new shoes, and hair gel. It was like I was a bug trapped inside a Macy's bag. I felt like every one of the 800 students at PM knew about what I'd done the night before and what a loser I was. So I just concentrated on the path that would lead me to the locker room at the sports complex. I ran through my schedule in my mind as I staggered to first period. 1. Conditioning 11M. Shawnee and JP would be in that class with me. 2. Advanced Calculus. Scary hot Megan Renshaw and Joey Cosentino, who knew what an asswing I was, were both in that class. 3. AP Macroeconomics. Megan and Joey, hour 2 of 2. 4. American Lit. Ultra hot Annie. Oh, and JP too. 5. Lunch. I could find a shady spot away from my friends to die. 6. Team Athletics. The first day of rugby, a possible reason for rising from the grave of lunch.
Hey, West! Wait up!
It was too late to just put my head down and I pretend I didn't notice her. Annie came running up behind me, fantastically perfect in her school skirt. I knew I looked so guilty, too, like I had done something wrong to her. I felt sick, and I almost wanted to cry when I saw her, but I didn't have any idea exactly why.
"Where were you? I was looking for you this morning," she said.
Then I noticed her expression change when she got close enough to see my eyes.
"I'm sorry, Annie. I am really sick." "Oh my God, Ryan Dean, you look terrible."
And it was so wonderful to hear her actually say my first name like that. I sighed. "Gee, thanks." I looked at my watch. There were no bells at PM. You just had to be where you had to be when you had to be there. It was 7:55.
"Maybe you should go see the doctor," she said. "What's wrong with you?"
"I'll be okay," I said.
I didn't want to miss first day. I'm going to be late for PE. I'll see you in lit, okay?
I turned away and she brushed my hair with her hand and said,
I hope you feel better.
Chapter 11. On the first day of conditioning, we had to go out on a 3-mile run to the north shore of the lake and back. I knew Shawnee and JP could tell something was wrong with me. We all stayed in the back of the pack, jogging slow so we could talk.
What happened last night?
JP asked at first.
The game got started at midnight, I said.
That's when it started? Shawnee said.
A little bit after midnight, I said. Kevin Cantrell, Joey Cosentino, me, and Chaz. And they brought beer with them.
Just saying it made me feel sick again.
God, Ryan Dean, you could get so thrown out of school for that,
JP said.
Did you drink? Shawnee asked.
They kind of made me.
We ran a few steps in silence. I thought I could tell what they were thinking, and I said,
I got drunk. And I lost out first, too. Oh, God, JP said.
And Shawnee, always the cheerful one, added,
So, what's it feel like to be a fucking alcoholic?
Then he pushed me and I almost fell into the lake. I knew he was just joking around, but Shawnee was always so creepy about how he said things.
Man, Shawnee, I am so fucking sick.
Well, I didn't actually say fucking, because I really never do cuss, but I was fucking sick. I sure thought the word, even if I didn't say it. And then I wondered, does cussing count in the general scheme of things if you only cuss in your head and not out loud? And I added, I am never going to do that again.
That's what all fucking alcoholics say, Shawnee deadpanned. Then they go home, get shit-faced, and shoot their wife in the fucking forehead while she's cooking a meatloaf and green beans.
I had to laugh. I also had to get back to the toilets in the locker room.
What did they do to you when you lost?
JP asked.
I tried to remember, but it seemed so grainy and unclear, like those films of Neil Armstrong walking on the moon.
Wait, Shawnee said. If Joey was there, maybe it's something you should talk about, like, with your dad.
You're a freak, Shawnee, I said. They made me go downstairs and pee in the girls' floor bathroom and sing. And there's no girls there except for that, ew, Mrs. Singer.
She's so freaking hot, Shawnee said. Did she look at your wiener?
I had to stop. I doubled over laughing. And Shawnee still didn't even crack a smile.
I locked her out. She was pissed off. The guys pulled me out of the window.
So then, Shawnee said, emotionless, did Joey look at your wiener?
That's messed up, I said. I like Joey, and he's a hell of a fly half.
Joey's cool, JP added. And Shawnee yelled up to the sky,
Universal take back. I am sorry, Joey. I will never, ever make fun of your gayness again.
And of course, Joey, who was a senior, wouldn't have been anywhere near the class anyway. We had reached the turnaround spot and were heading back to the gym. JP asked,
What song did he sing?
Proper Ranger.
Oh, nice.
Then Shawnee and JP started singing it. And I had to join in, and some of the guys ahead of us heard it too, and the ones on the rugby team were singing up there right with us. But I didn't tell Shawnee and JP about the diarrhea spell, because I didn't believe it was anything more than a sick coincidence, karma kind of. It served me right for being stupid enough to get drunk in the first place. And I didn't tell them about seeing Mrs. Singer staring at me from behind the door when I left for school either. Chapter 12. By the time I made it to calculus, I felt like the hangover diarrhea spell was losing strength. But now I realized that I desperately needed to go back to sleep, too. The only real sleep I had gotten the night before was when I dozed off before the game even started. I never slept during a class, though, and I was honestly afraid that if I did, two horrible things would happen. First, I would have a dream about that witch downstairs. I had now convinced myself, after two more stops at the toilet, I must be caving in, I must have lost 30% of my skinny bitch-ass body weight, that Mrs. Singer was an honest-to-God witch, and second, I would get an extension on my sentence in O'Hall. After the night before, I realized that I needed to get out of there before Chaz succeeded, as my friends warned me, at turning me into an asshole. When I thought about it, as inevitably I did, stumbling down the corridor toward the mind-numbing experience of calculus, I figured out that most of the guys in O'Hall, except for me, the cell phone hacker, and three compulsive class ditchers, were in Opportunity Hall for fighting. 8 of the 12 of us were fighters, 5 football players, and Kevin, Chaz, and Joey. Of all the guys you'd think would never get into a fight, you'd have to pick Joey. I never asked him about it, but I figured it had to have something to do with him sticking up for himself when another guy was trying to start some shit. Probably. And because advanced calculus was pretty much the end of the math highway, unless you took statistics, which I planned to take in 12th grade, the class had only 8 students in it. I was the last one through the door. There were so many empty desks, I was overwhelmed by the pressure of choosing where to sit. And every single person in the goddamned room, even Mrs. Kurtz, the teacher, who was actually kind of hot in a bespectacled Lois Lane kind of way, seemed to be watching the Ryan Dean West show, aware of the internal dialogue taking place in my headachy, hangovery, diarrhea, dehydrated head. Ryan Dean West won. Sit in the very back of the room, close to the door. Ryan Dean West glances at the solitary desk beside the door. Ryan Dean West 2. Dude, that is entirely 3, 4, 5 empty desks away from the closest other person. They will think we're a pathetic 14-year-old loser with no social skills. Ryan Dean West 1. So? We are. Ryan Dean West drops his calculus book. It weighs almost as much as he does. Suppressed laughter among the students in the room. He turns red. Ryan Dean West 2. Are you turning red? You are such a fucking loser. Ryan Dean West picks up the book. Mrs. Kurtz. Why don't you come up front and sit close to everyone else? Ryan Dean West 1. How the fuck did she get in the play? Ryan Dean West 2. I don't know, but she's kinda hot. Ryan Dean West looks at the seats in the front of the room. Ryan Dean West, too, continued. If you sit next to Joey, the other kids might think you're gay. Ryan Dean West, 1. They might just think I'm confident and comfortable with my own sexuality. Ryan Dean West, 2. Dude, Ryan Dean West, confident, and sexuality are entirely distinct concepts, which cannot exist simultaneously in the same universe. It could cause a black hole or something. Ryan Dean West 1. Fuck you. I'm sitting next to Joey. Ryan Dean West 2. Is it because you feel guilty because Shawnee the stalker made fun of him being gay? Ryan Dean West 1. I don't feel guilty, and I'm going to sit next to him, and I don't care what you or anyone else thinks, because you know I'm not gay. Ryan Dean West 2. Score! That's right behind Megan Renshaw. 5 out of 5 chicken pot pies on the Ryan Dean West heat index. Maybe her hair will accidentally brush against your hand. Ryan Dean West 1. Chicken pot pies? Ryan Dean West 2. Whatever. Ryan Dean West takes seat next to Joey. Hey, Ryan Dean.
Hey, Joey.
I cleared my throat.
Hi, Megan. Hi, Ryan Dean.
She smiled and turned around in her desk. Her soft blonde hair swept across my desktop and over my hand. It felt so cool. Score. Then she even put her hand on top of mine and said,
Look at you,
You must have grown a foot. You look totally hot. How was your summer?
I almost lost consciousness. I could feel all the blood in my dehydrated, skinny, bitch-ass body surging downward to some useless region below my belt.
Amazing. What did you do?
I can't remember.
I heard about you last night.
Megan patted my hand.
Sounds like you had a little fun.
I looked at Joey. I didn't tell her, he said. Are you okay?
God, I am so sick. Don't ever let me do that again.
I tried to stop you, you know. Chaz wouldn't let me.
I know.
We all sat in that same arrangement in macroeconomics, too. Megan in front of me, Joey on my right. I wondered why teenagers do that sort of thing, but I've seen it happening in classes ever since I can remember. I guess it's like an unconscious way of making the universe consistent and uniform, even if your anchors to reality happen to be one, extremely hot and unattainable, and two, gay. After econ, we had a 20-minute break. I just looked around for a bench in the shade and stretched out on it. I put my backpack over my face so I wouldn't have to see anyone, and maybe no one would see me either. I could have stayed that way forever. But I heard Shawnee and JP standing over me laughing about something.
Hey, hangover boy, we've been looking all over for you,
JP said.
Come on, get up. It's time for lit class. We're almost through to lunch.
Oh, yeah. Another thing about the charms of PM. Since nobody can have cell phones and stuff, the kids here actually talk to each other. And they write notes, too. I know those are both ridiculously primitive human behaviors, but what else can you do when your school forces you to live like the fucking Donner Party? The reason I mentioned this is that as I lifted the backpack away from my sweaty face, Shawnee slipped me a folded square of paper with flowers and hearts drawn on it and said,
"Here, read this. I wrote you a haiku about how gay you are for sitting next to Joey for two classes in a row."
I also sat right next to Megan Renshaw.
That's called compensation.
I slipped my hand inside my vest and put Shawnee's note in my front pocket.
Nice, I said. In lit class, I'm going to write you a sonnet about how nothing could possibly be gayer than writing your friend a haiku.
Chapter 13. It just proved that everyone was right about Shawnee being a stalker. Why would he be so obsessed as to find out exactly where I sat in my classes? He probably kept little stalker charts and notebooks on everyone he knew. I had been feeling so sick that day that I wasn't even thinking about Annie until I saw her in our American literature class. Just seeing her made me feel momentarily healed. I walked down the aisle beside her desk and sat in the empty seat next to hers. She just glanced at me, and then refocused on the paperback she was reading.
"Hi. Can I sit next to you?"
"I don't care."
Whoa. The very last time I had seen her, she actually touched me. She rubbed her hand through my hair. She called me Ryan Dean, and she said she hoped I'd feel better. And now? All of a sudden, she was so obviously pissed off at me. JP sat down on the other side of her. I saw him look at me. He had watched our little exchange. I could tell he saw something was up, too. But before I could ask her about it, Mr. Wellens began blathering away about American literature and Nathaniel Hawthorne, an author I honestly do like. But how was I supposed to pay attention to him when I felt like crap and Annie Altman just about slapped me across my face with her "I don't care"? Note to self. Now, that last paragraph ended with a cluster of punctuation marks I have never seen together in that order in my life. I took Shawnee's note out and unfolded it. He actually did write me a haiku, and there was no way I was going to waste my time responding with a sonnet. The top of the page had been decorated with a rainbow. Beneath it were two crudely drawn stick figures holding hands, arrows pointed to each of them from identifying names, Winger on one side and Joey on the other. Winger and Joey, beside each other in class, let's be study buddies. And I wrote underneath it, "You're a fucking moron who can't even count syllables, Shawnee." Is something wrong, Annie? I wrote it on the edge of Shawnee's note. I put a smiley face next to the question mark. She leaned over and scrawled, "I heard you got drunk last night. You're an asshole." "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to." "You're an asshole just like Chaz. Don't even talk to me. See ya." And that was that. She ignored me for the rest of that endless lecture on Hawthorne, which I couldn't listen to. My ears were ringing. I sat there wishing I could just die. And underneath the note I had left for Shawnee, I wrote one more line. "And fuck you for telling Annie I got drunk last night, too. Good friend." When Mr. Wellens dismissed us for lunch, Annie sprang out of her chair and rushed out the door. "Annie, wait." But I knew I wouldn't catch her. "What's going on?" JP asked. "Nothing. She's pissed off at me." "You think?" JP tried to smile. "Let's go get lunch." "I'm not feeling good," I said. "I'll see you at rugby." JP just shrugged and packed up his stuff. Chapter 14. Now I really felt terrible. I wanted to give up, and I wanted to kick Chaz Becker in the teeth, too. Just about everyone was crowding into the mess hall, all buzzing with first day back stories. Those who didn't hang out inside sat in segregated groups on the grass between the mess hall and the stadium. I followed the path along the lake, alone, and found a bench near Oho. I put my pack down as a pillow and kicked off my hot brand new shoes that turned my socks black in spots. I lay down, staring up into the branches on the pines that towered over me. This was the worst day of my life. Scarcely 24 hours had passed since my parents had abandoned me here, and already my life was spiraling out of control. I got drunk with Chaz Becker. The ultra-unhot Mrs. Singer downstairs did something weird to me. My best friend hated me, which made me realize that I would never have any chance with her or any other girl for that matter, because I was a 14-year-old skinny-ass loser bitch. And I felt like steaming hot dog crap. Other than that, things were just swell. Then, I did something I actually honestly have not done since I was in like fourth grade. I actually honestly started to cry. I am such a loser. I really didn't belong here. I folded my arms across my eyes. I think only about 2 tears came out before I got hold of myself and stopped feeling so stupid and useless. Well, maybe I got hold of myself. Maybe those tears drained all the fluid I had left in me. And I just lay there like that, until I began hearing the motion of kids on their way to afternoon classes, so I straightened up, put on my shoes, and headed back to the locker room for the last class of the day. Chapter 15. It made me feel alive to lace up my rugby boots. As long as they were on me, I could forget about everything else that swirled around inside this 142-pound sack of dehydrated failure. I loved the sound of all those metal cleats moving around on the cold concrete floor in the locker room. There was something ancient in that noise, the music of a coordinated herd. I sat on the bench between Shawnee and JP while we changed. I pulled the folded haiku from my pocket and gave it back to Shawnee. "You suck at poetry," I said. Shawnee was tying up the drawstring inside his shorts. "You pissed off Annie, too," JP said. Sometimes, just sometimes, Shawnee could be sincere about things. He said, "I'm sorry I told her about you, Ryan Dean. I thought she'd think it was funny, too. Really, I'm sorry." JP sat on the bench and pulled his long socks up to his knees. "God," he said, "I've been dying to play all summer. I need to hit someone."
Me too, I said. You want to hit me, Ryan Dean? Shawnee asked.
Get a ball in front of me on the field, and you're going the other way, yeah, I said. Other than that, I don't think I'd ever hit anyone off the field.
Me too, JP said.
And that was all we needed to say to let Shawnee know it was okay. I couldn't wait to see Coach McAuliffe, Coach M, we called him, again. He was a little guy, a former winger, too, and he was a transplant from England who could talk the most civilized-sounding shit you would ever hear, and he could cuss you out with the most vicious obscenities, and it would sound like he was reading from Shakespeare. But Coach M was a die-hard traditionalist as far as the sport was concerned, and everything had to be perfectly maintained that way. From the words we used and didn't use, because on the pitch, nobody could cuss except for Coach M, when we were around him, to the clothes we wore during practice. He'd make us wear the shortest rugby shorts anyone ever saw. Now, inexperienced observers do not understand why the shorts in rugby have to be the way they are, but just trust me, that's how they need to be. Nowadays, pretty much all the guys wore compression shorts under them anyway. And those would just about go down to our knees, but compression shorts were crucial because you'd almost never make it through a game without getting a square hit, punch, elbow, grab, or sometimes even the bottom of a foot right in your balls. One of the funniest things I ever saw happened when Shawnee first started playing after he'd quit the basketball team. Since Shawnee was so tall and skinny, Coach M wanted us to try to lift him in line-out practice. A line-out is when the ball gets thrown in from out of bounds, and players can lift up a teammate, by his shorts usually, so he can reach the ball. Well, Shawnee, at that time, was just wearing boxers under his shorts, rather than compression shorts. And when the forwards lifted him, he said it felt like his balls ended up in back of his nipples. His eyes bugged out, his hands both went right down to his crotch, and he said, "Oh my fucking God!" Of course, the ball just sailed past him. He had other things on his mind. And he never came back to pitch without some tight compression shorts on under everything. We shook hands with the other guys, the team always had to do that, when we passed through the locker room. And the three of us walked together up the hill path that cut between the other practice fields to the rugby pitch. This, of course, took us right beside the fields where the soccer and football teams practiced. We always got along well with the soccer team. They tended to be pretty clever with the jokes they'd play on us and were always appreciative of what we'd do to them. But for whatever reasons, the football team just absolutely hated us. I don't even think hate is a strong enough word for the emotions we stirred in them, which is why two of them had no problem whatever in deciding to put my face in a toilet the day before. I figured there was a sort of predictable pattern to a football player versus rugby player exchange that went something like this. The football player fires a put-down he'd probably been thinking about all day. Then, the rugby player comes up with an even more scathing comeback and laughs. Then the football player, who can only think of one thing to say and nothing else, says something about wanting to fight and walks away. So, as I fully expected, when JP, Shawnee, and I passed the football field, Casey Palmer, the quarterback and practically my next-door neighbor in O'Hall, and Nick Matthews, his roommate and conspirator in the Give Ryan Dean a Welcoming Bath in the Toilet plot, were standing by the fountain trough at the edge of the sideline, and Casey shouted to us, "Ooh, rugby players! Nice shorts, gay boys!" Good one. What a predictable dipshit. And Shawnee, as stoic as ever, said, "You want to know how I know you're gay, Palmer? 'Cause you got a picture of some guy's ball sack on your My site, that's how. Ha-ha! Are you the one that did that, Flaherty? If you are, I'll fucking kill you!" Casey yelled back. JP and I just looked at each other and then at Shawnee. "Does he have a picture of some guy's balls on his My site?" I asked.
"Sure," Shawnee said. "Haven't you seen it?"
"No." "No," JP added.
Then Shawnee just looked at us with his cold reptilian eyes and said,
"Okay. It took me about 10 straight hours on Friday
to hack his password and put that picture on. I guess he hasn't been able to resolve the issue yet. Maybe he'll figure it out if he goes home this weekend. I sent a mass email out to everyone on the football team saying, I wonder why there is a picture of some guy's nutsack on Casey Palmer's My site. JP and I began laughing, staring right at Casey, who looked at that moment like he could kill someone. The best part is, they're my balls, Shawnee said, absolutely straight-faced. I have a printout if you guys want to see it.
Sean Russell Flaherty? I said. You are so disturbed.
That's fucking demented, JP agreed.
In an elegant way, though. And no, you don't have to show me the printout of your balls, Shawnee.
Dude, Shawnee, I said, you put a picture of your own balls on the internet?
I know.
Shawnee actually laughed, twice, monotone, weird.
This is probably the best reason I have right now for why I don't have a My site, I said.
Oh, but you do have a My site, my friend, Shawnee said in an incredibly creepy voice. I've seen it. You friended me. And JP's got one, too.
You are fucking kidding me, JP said. He sounded pissed.
Ha ha, Shawnee said.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
And again, that was what was so fucking creepy about Shawnee. Who could tell if he was really kidding? And then, as we were about halfway up the hill toward the pitch, as if Casey Palmer's inflated sense of masculinity hadn't been assailed enough, we all heard a soft, familiar voice with an English accent say,
Why are you boys staring at my players' asses?
Because I guess Casey and Nick just kept watching us as we walked up the hill. Coach M knew what was up. He'd never let the football team get away with any shit on us. Not ever. Chapter 16. Practice was light. Coach M said we weren't going to start hitting until we could see what we had. And I was okay with that because I was weak and felt so shitty after what I'd gone through. We ran through a usual warm-up, a slow jog, some stretches, a few quick hands passing drills. Then we ran some 40s and suicides, and that's when Coach M noticed that I was definitely not the fastest guy out there. He said, Did you slow down over the summer, Winger? You're going to need to put on some speed if you expect to keep your job. And that made me feel even worse, because not only did I screw things up for myself and Annie, but I let Coach M down, too. So before we broke up into teams for a little touch sevens, I asked Coach M if I could talk to him.
I'm sorry, Coach. I'm just really sick today. I'll be back up to speed tomorrow.
What's the matter, Ryan Dean?
I just... And then... Last night was my first night in Opportunity Hall, and I couldn't sleep at all. I feel horrible.
It wasn't really a lie. He put his hand on my shoulder and said,
I understand, Ryan Dean. Let's hope you can get your shit straightened out this year and get out of Ohol.
See, that's just how he talks, but it sounds so musical and soothing with that English accent. And then he added,
Before Chaz Becker turns you into an asshole.
Coach M picked four guys to be team captains, and then we had a little sevens tournament. Sevens is a scaled-down version of rugby where there are only seven as opposed to 15 players on a team. And we were playing touch instead of tackle, so the entire game was really based on speed and ball handling. I was still surprised, though, when Joey, who was our regular backs captain, picked me first to be on his team. JP was also on our team, along with a couple centers and some of the second-string loose forwards. Shawnee actually ended up on a team with Chaz and Kevin, so I knew the games would be really competitive. And when it came down to the end, it was our two teams in the final match. I scored first, off a sweet fake-loop pass from Joey, because as soon as I had that ball in my hands, I was gone. but that was all we managed to put up, and Chaz's team came back with 3 unanswered scores to win the tournament. Sometimes losing in rugby is more fun than winning. On that day, at the end of practice, Coach M made the 3 losing squads jog down to the practice fields and sing a song to the football team. Joey led us, and we all decided to sing "Oh Susanna," but we changed Susanna to Casey. And we are horrible singers, but we sing really loud, so Casey and the other football players couldn't do anything about it. They tried to ignore us, but they were helpless, and all they could manage to do was fire out comments like, "What a bunch of faggots!" When we were finished, some of the football players actually clapped. At least they got it, that it was all in fun, and that if you messed with the rugby team, we were going to mess right back. But it wasn't a threatening or intimidating messing with. It was always meant to show that we could take a joke and joke back, too. Casey started it with his nice shorts comment at the start of practice, and now he had to endure being the object of our serenading. When we finished the first verse and 1 chorus, we jogged down to the locker room. The day had finally ended, and as I sat down on the bench and took off my cleats, the horrible day I'd had came back to me, and I thought again about what a loser I was already turning out to be on the first day of my 11th grade year. Chapter 17. I threw my clothes on without showering. I could do that back at O'Hall, even though the showers here in the locker room were so much cleaner and more private. But all I wanted to do was get away from school and deposit myself into bed. So I just wadded up my gear and stuffed it into my locker. I put my sweater inside my backpack and sloppily hung my tie over my shoulders without even buttoning or tucking in my shirt. The day was over, and now it didn't matter if we were dressed properly or not. I didn't even wait for Shawnee and JP to get out of the showers. I shook hands with a few of the guys as I left the locker room. I guess it was about 4:30 when I made my way down the hill on the path toward the lake. I could see some people walking around the campus below, but most kids at that time of day were either back in their dorms or finishing up whatever team sports were being practiced in September. I noticed Joey walking on the path, maybe about 100 yards ahead of me, obviously heading back to O'Hall too. But when he got down to the football field, I saw Casey and Nick step out of a crowd of players who were standing around doing nothing, which is what most football players do all practice, and run over to Joey. And I could tell just by the way they were moving that they were looking to start shit with Joey. So I turned around, but no one else from the rugby team was walking down from the locker room yet. Great. Me and Joey versus the entire steroid-crazed dumbass football team. I started walking faster. Casey and Nick didn't even notice I was coming. They looked up the hill toward the locker room as Joey got closer, but who would notice my skinny-ass bitch body coming down that way? Or if they did notice me, what would it matter to them anyway? Then I saw Casey, puffing his chest out, walk right up to Joey and push him hard, knocking Joey back. And Casey said, "You think you're funny with your song, queer?" I threw my backpack down and ran as fast as I could. I knew Joey would fight. He wasn't afraid of anyone. You had to be like that to be a fly half, and I'm sure that Joey had been hit square against his unpadded body at least 1,000 times more than Casey ever had. But I wasn't going to let him get gang-jumped by those assholes. So I ran faster than I did in practice. I had to. And just as Joey was making a fist, Nick was circling behind him, and Casey was in the process of throwing the first punch, I launched myself, head up and shoulder down, right into Casey's knees, and wrapped my arms around his legs, driving him crashing to the ground. I sprang up off Casey. Casey said, "What the fuck?" And he punched me in the face just as I got to my feet, knocking me down into Joey. And just then, one of the football coaches saw what was happening and yelled at us to cut it out. The coach just stood there, down the field, holding a clipboard and spitting tobacco, watching us like he was too lazy to come over and see if this was really a fight or not. All I can say is that if Coach M had seen what I did, my ass would be done, over, off the team, kicked out of school.
What the fuck you think you're doing, you little piece of shit?
I could only assume Casey Palmer was talking to me. Then I noticed my chest was covered in blood, and my unbuttoned, once white school uniform shirt was splattered with red. My knees buckled. I had to sit down. Okay, I thought this was it. I had done as much to my body as it could take in the last 24 hours. Now I was surely dying. I prepared myself to look into the tunnel of light and see my great-grandma and that little Chihuahua dog I had when I was 4 that got run over by a UPS van. Well, they didn't both get run over by the UPS van, but you know what I mean. Then I heard a whistle, and the football coach screamed at Casey and Nick to get back over to their standing-around drill, and I knew I wasn't dead. But my nose was bleeding pretty good.
God, I am such an idiot, I said.
Why the fuck did you do that?
Joey sounded pissed off.
Overlap. 2-on-1.
I slipped my shirt off and held it over my face. I pulled it back and looked. I wasn't bleeding so bad anymore. Maybe I was empty.
You better get cleaned up or you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
I wiped off the blood as much as I could with my ruined shirt and stood up.
I'll just say it happened in practice, I said. Tackling a guy, it's the truth.
I'd gotten more bloody noses playing rugby than I could count. Well, actually, I only have one nose that's been bloodied, but it has happened dozens of times.
God, I am so done for today.
I balled up my shirt and stuffed it into my backpack. I took off for O'Hall just as I saw the guys from our team coming out from the locker room and making their way down the hill. Joey just stood there at the edge of the football field, looking at those assholes practice, waiting for our teammates to catch up to him. Chapter 18. The water on the tiles and the shower stall turned pink around my feet where the dried blood washed down from my body. When it was finally clear, I turned the water to full cold and stood there for 30 seconds. It almost made me scream. I toweled off and went to bed. It was 5 o'clock. I lay there with my books, finishing the small amount of homework I'd been assigned, just a couple review problems in calculus. Then I opened a paperback and began reading. We were supposed to read Rappaccini's Daughter and write a response paper on it, but I had until Wednesday. So I read the first page, then put it down beside my pillow and stared up at the ceiling. I loved the way Hawthorne said things. I wished that I could also find no better occupation than to look down into the garden beneath my window. But I had, in such a short time, gotten myself so occupied with crap that I lay there convinced there was no way I would make it through my 11th grade year. I opened my notebook and wrote a letter to Annie. Even if I never gave it to her, at least I felt like I could write down what I wished I could tell her. In true Ryan Dean West fashion, I drew a Venn diagram on the note, trying to explain to her something about myself, the little boy, hoping that maybe she would realize what I thought was so obvious about the people we deal with who are all around us, everywhere and every day. And as soon as I'd written the first couple of sentences, I reread them, and they sounded so pathetic and lost that I just tore the page from my notebook and threw it away. I was so tired. I climbed down from the bed, undressed, and turned off the light. Chapter 19.
What the fuck is wrong with you? Shawnee said.
The light came on and I woke up. My books were scattered around my head and I was lying face up on top of the covers. Shawnee, JP, and Joey were standing just inside the door, dressed in their shirts and ties, like they had just come from dinner at the mess hall. I propped myself up on my elbows and looked at them. I rubbed my hair and sat up. My head nearly touched the ceiling, but not quite.
I just needed to sleep, I said. What time is it?
I looked at the clock. It was 8:15.
Everyone was looking for you, JP said. You missed dinner.
Yeah, I bet Casey Palmer was looking for me too.
I wasn't hungry.